seriously want.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of five, yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, once again taking you all home on the Drive at 5. As we're high atop Madison Square Garden, these great facilities provided for us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. As you get into your van, your pickup truck, your car, and listen on terrestrial radio and hook up to find out what's been going on in the world while you've been working your 9 to 5, or it could be on an app, or maybe you'll listen later on in our full length here on a podcast, or it could be streaming audio on your worktop computer in which you're continuing to labor away, or in terms of your laptop. Well, guess what? Earlier today, the news was that Hope Hicks, who had been the White House communications director and the closest person to the president of the United States, Donald Trump, who wasn't related to him in the White House, had said to a congressional committee yesterday, as she was being cross-examined and interrogated for more than 8 hours, that on occasion she had to tell white lies on behalf of the president of the United States. Now, you got to be a real freaking moron to go before a congressional committee and say that you've been telling lies on behalf of the president, because her phalanx of lawyers shut her down at that point. They said, hold up, Hope. You have just admitted lying on behalf of the president of the United States to a congressional committee. We better go back in there and amend that after you have your tuna fish sandwich. And she tried, but let's face it, it did not work out. So as a result of that, Hope Hicks has resigned as the White House communication director. So who do we have there previously? He was the guy who was selling penny stocks, you know, out of a basement in Bensonhurst, probably for the Gambino or the Bonanno crime family, Scaramucci. What an oily, greasy, what a negative role model for Italian Americans. That guy was a double disgrazia, a double shanda. And then he was replaced with Hope Hicks. Okay. It's like you had the House of Cards with Kevin Spacey right on Netflix, and that program has come unglued because of Ken Spacey's decadence and debauchery, and he's a perv. And you have the House of Chaos, the West Wing of the White House now, on the line to discuss it, including another beatdown that the president gave to his Attorney General Jeff Sessions earlier today on Twitter. Is Dale Jackson, talk show host on WVNN in Huntsville. Thanks for jumping on board on the Drive Home at 5 again, Dale.
Hey, absolutely thrilled to be here.
Okay, Dale, so Hope Hicks marches into that congressional hearing yesterday and tells them, I've told white lies on behalf of the president. Now, is she just vapid? Did her lawyers not prepare her for this? Or do you think she was just boxed in and had to acknowledge, yeah, I placate the president?
No, I think it's the last thing. I think she has no choice. She's in there speaking to members of Congress. She's under oath. And she has told lies for the president of the United States. I mean, that's really one of Donald Trump's biggest problems, is he has an absolute problem with telling the truth sometimes. And I don't even think he's shy about it himself. I think if you asked him, in a moment of honesty, and you probably got him under oath, he would admit he lies too. So I think she was boxed in, but I think he doesn't want to see people say that. And I think that she really had no choice but to do that.
Do you think that this position is cursed in the White House, that of being a White House communications director? Because I think they've had three now who have washed out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, would you want to be the guy who has to tell the president of the United States, hey, and don't do that? No. Don't say that. No. Don't tweet that. I mean, would you want to be that person and then have to be the person that's in control of trying to put the pieces back together after he does the things you told him not to do? Or maybe they're not telling him not to do those things and they're just cleaning up his mess. But either way, I wouldn't want any part of that.
Dale Jackson, you think the president, his staff, the chief of staff, General Kelly, should just say, you know, this is one position we're going to save the taxpayers some money on. We're just not going to fill it.
I don't know. It all depends. Is he ever going to listen to anybody in any of these positions? I mean, John Kelly, the reports are he's incredibly frustrated with his job. Same exact reason. Donald Trump is used to doing what Donald Trump wants and then having everybody else pick up the pieces. This is a different type of job. And you know, the people who are supposed to pick up his pieces are on the taxpayer dime. They can be called before Congress. They have to do a bunch of different things that the normal folks who work for Donald Trump didn't have to do. And it seems like it's a lot less fun than it would originally sound. And I can see why these people are getting burned out.
Now, Dale, you know Jeff Sessions, our attorney general, former U.S. Senator of Alabama, probably could have had that seat in perpetuity. He left that to serve the president and run the Justice Department. He has become a human pinata. I don't believe he's a masochist, but again, the president launched an all-out assault on him on Twitter, very similar to what he said in the past.
Sessions gets the job. Right after he gets the job, he recuses himself.
Was that a mistake?
Well, Sessions should have never recused himself. And if he was going to recuse himself, he should have told me before he took the job, and I would have picked somebody else.
Now, Dale, I know originally it's been reported that at one point after that they had a shouting match. The president said, you know, I ought to fire you. Sessions said, no, I'm not resigning. You know, I'm here. I'm your attorney general. How long, Dale, based on your knowledge of Jeff Sessions, can he continue to be a human pinata for the president?
I don't know the answer to that question, but what I do know is Jeff Sessions is a true believer. He got behind Donald Trump when nobody else would. He was the first United States senator. He was all in. People like me said to him, Senator Sessions, what are you doing? How can you get behind this guy? And he was a true believer because he believed in the stuff Donald Trump said he wanted to get done with the illegal immigration, crime, etc. Jeff Sessions is a true believer. And his statement that you just talked about where he said, I'm not gonna quit, I'm your attorney general, he's basically saying, you're going to have to fire me because Jeff Sessions is there plugging away every single day doing what Jeff Sessions said he was going to do. Now, if he fires him, so be it. But Jeff Sessions knows that it would be really, really bad if Donald Trump does fire him. Jeff Sessions sticking to it the way he is the best thing for Donald Trump. He needs to take his medicine and have a guy who maybe isn't doing all the stuff that he wants him to do, but is doing the right thing. Jeff Sessions will do the right thing. That's what he's been about all along, and Donald Trump, he needs someone that's like that. Jeff Sessions is going to make him fire him if he goes.
Well, now, if you were a betting man and hanging out at the Wind Creek Indian Casino, Dale Jackson, in your home state of Alabama, what is the likelihood in the future that we're going to hear this come out of the mouth of the President of the United States towards Jeff Sessions? Maybe not now, but in the future.
You're fired.
I mean, that's what made him famous on The Apprentice.
I don't know. I think that it's very likely it does happen at some point in time, but why hasn't he done it yet? I think he just likes to vent, and Jeff Sessions takes it, and he says, I'm just going to continue right on doing my job the way I'm supposed to. You want to complain about me on Twitter and social media, you go right ahead. I'm going to keep doing my job. Because I think Jeff Sessions, like you just said earlier, he gave up a plum job. The people in the state of Alabama love Jeff Sessions. He could have been senator forever. He's not going to give that up for a year and a month. He's in that job until Donald Trump tells him he's fired, and I think Donald Trump will one day maybe do it, but it's not a good call for him because Jeff Sessions hasn't done anything that requires him being fired. All he's done is recused himself from the campaign investigation because he was a part of it. And every time something comes up that needs to be investigated, he sends it off to the right people. Donald Trump apparently wants an attorney general who's going to be a hatchet man for him. And Jeff Sessions isn't that guy. But I think Trump knows he's going to have a hard time getting that guy through the United States Senate and getting him confirmed.
Now, very quickly, Dale, apparently Kushner, his son-in-law, is upset. He feels that everyone in the West Wing is opposed to him now. They're trying to box him out. Ivanka has complained she's not getting the respect in the administration from her peers as she was originally. You think it's time for Daddy, the president, to sit down with his son-in-law and daughter and say, you know, maybe it's better that you move back to New York, you oversee your businesses, I'll seek advice from you from time to time, but you're spinning your wheels here in the West Wing now.
I mean, I guess, because if neither of them can get a secret or top secret clearance, they can't really see anything. What's different than them being in New York City and him picking up the phone and going, hey, how do you think it's going? I mean, I if he can't get a security clearance, then what is the point of having him there in that role? And if I was Kushner, I'd want out of this. So I mean, maybe he does go back to New York City and joins you guys.
Do appreciate that. That's Dale Jackson from the heart of Session Land, we'll call it, Alabama, where the hillbilly phone screener for the Mark Levin Show is actually shoving off. He's going to be there tomorrow. He's leaving the position here at the height of the battle that I listened to last night between Mark Levin, who follows us from 6 to 9, and Michael Savage, who precedes us from 3 to 5. Oh, it was quite the brouhaha.
Deep connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC.
This is in honor of the hillbilly phone screener for the Mark Levin Show. It's his last day here operating in WABC. He'll be going down to Birmingham, Alabama. And so obviously we'll have another phone screener here. But it was interesting because yesterday was the battle of the two titans of talk radio. Oh, yeah. Sort of reminded me, you know, with the announcement that Don Imus will be retiring on March 29th. That'll be his last show here at WABC. For years, remember when he was on the old WNBC, Imus in the morning would battle Stern in the afternoon and vice versa. You couldn't wait to listen to both because you knew they'd be dissing and dismissing one another. So you listen to Imus in the morning and then you listen to Stern in the afternoon because you knew Stern was going to respond. And then Imus the following day with his crew, and it was nonstop. And it was great radio. Maybe the highlight of talk radio in New York City when listening to both drives. And we got a little bit of that yesterday because Michael Savage was feeling his oats. You know, he's omnipotent. He knows everything. He knows nothing about nothing. And he's a doctor of this. You can't see my hand right here, but you can imagine. So he takes a shot at Mark Levin. Mark Levin, who has overcome the flu, asthma, pneumonia, to remain on the air and listen to Savage demean or actually criticize Mark Levin.
And if you don't do it right, then you're crawling around and the people hear it. You're just repeating stuff they've heard before or reading off a website or selling something day and night. And no one wants to hear it. You get depressed, then they get depressed, then you cough again, then they hang up the show, and then, that's crazy. There's a time and a place for everything. You don't cough on the air day and night and expect an audience to listen to you. It's like you go in the crypt when you start coughing like that.
What is he a doctor of? He's a nutritionist, right? He could be running a cafeteria at a public school in New York City, and all of you, doctor, he knows nothing. Now, here's Mark Levin responding, who has actually fought through three maladies at one time. Remember, first the flu, then the asthma, then the pneumonia.
I understand there is a fat little slob on the air who is mocking the fact that I have pneumonia, Mr. Producer. Did you hear this? And apparently wants to run for office. I think he says that every 3 or 4 years to jack up his ratings. Well, I think you ought to run. Run. Be the first time he ever ran. Go ahead and run. Who's stopping you? Little puke.
Oh, reminds me. I truncated, of course. Because Imus would go on and on attacking Stern, and then Stern would spend like a first hour of a show responding. Great stuff here, though. Now, remember, they both support Donald Trump, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're lockstep in every opinion that they have. It's great to know that Michael Savage, who comes before me here on the drive home at 5, has it in for Mark Levin, who proved he was the man's man in this situation. Imagine. I don't even think I could deal with this. Think of it. The flu, asthma, and pneumonia all at the same time not only handled this program, talk radio all across the nation, but also did his Mark Levin TV, did his debut performance on the Fox News Channel on Sunday night at 10 o'clock, and was interviewed at CPAC by his wife on Saturday. All of that, remember, with the flu, with asthma, and pneumonia. There's no way I could have handled that. I'd have been down for the count. And Michael Savage, the wiener that he is, are you kidding? The flu would have taken him out.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
Be the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
One way or another, I'm gonna find ya. I'm gonna get ya.
5:41, Blondie, taking us home on the drive home at 5. But with the Me Too movement, which will be accentuated in Hollyweird on the walk, on the red carpet, and then the ceremony to follow, there is a division in men's minds now is when is it okay to flirt at work, or when is it that you will perceived of as being a perv? On the line to discuss it is Holly Kaplan. She's the author of the book, Surviving the Dick Click. And let me clarify that. That's in honor of Tricky Dicky Nixon, the former president who left in disgrazia. Thanks for joining us here on the drive home at 5, Holly.
Hey, thanks for having me. And I'm impressed you said the title of the book. And yes, it does refer to Richard. You are absolutely right.
Thank you. That just saved me. Now,
yep.
When is it okay to flirt at work in this environment now where some guys are on pins and needles?
Oy, oy, oy. That's such a tough question because flirting is fun and it's empowering and it makes you feel desirable. And I love to flirt. I'm not really good at it, but I love it. But as far as doing it in the workplace, now we have different rules. It's not something that we should really approach in the workplace at this point.
I know, but it used to be so frivolous,
yeah.
So improv, so on the spot in the moment. Oftentimes, both sides were contributing to it, so,
right.
You know, you had a green light. So you would suggest that even though it may be agreeable to both, other people may get the wrong impression and just shut it down.
Exactly, because it's how you're perceived now if you do flirt, right? Like, what is the purpose of flirting? Why are you talking to him or her that way? Why are you giving them so much attention? And then what does it mean? Because we have such blurry lines now, you know, what is friends and what is not. I just think we really have to be careful. And like you said earlier, Me Too has created such a heightened level of awareness. Everybody's so sensitive right now that it's best to just not engage.
Well, what do you do, though? Because so many couples who
right.
will tell you this story of how they first got together will say, we met at work. You hear this over and over. We met at work. What do you do now to overcome that? How do you protect yourself and obviously the person that you desire?
Yeah, I love that question, and you're right. Most people meet at work because that's where we spend most of our time, right? It's a natural process for that to happen that way. If you feel like you're genuinely interested in someone, take it out of work. It doesn't mean you have to flirt at work. It means meet at a Starbucks on a Saturday afternoon away from the fluorescent lighting and the cubicles. You know what I mean? Take it outside of the office so you can make sure that it's genuine and it's not something that's just fleeting. Make sure you have more in common other than just being attracted to someone at the office. So I think we have to have the wherewithal to be able to take it outside now.
Now, just like you have all kinds of contracts now in terms of getting married, you know, there's the prenup.
Yeah.
Is there something like the pre-love contract that you have at work?
You are so smart. Yes, there is. There's something called the love contract, which is having a resurgence now in light of all of this. And I'm glad you brought it up because companies are using it again. And what the contract does is it gives complete transparency between the company and the couple involved. It protects the company from anything bad happening. They can say, yes, we're aware that John and Susan were in a relationship. It was consensual. They signed this document. And they could actually move those two people, John and Susan, if they're both in sales, maybe they move one to marketing, right? And that helps them eliminate any bad feelings from other employees or conflicts of interest. So there are a lot of positives in it. You just have to be brave enough to bring it to HR to do it.
So appreciate that. Holly Kaplan, author of the book, Surviving the Dick Click. You think she was fawning over me? Huh? What do you think? Huh? You think I got grounds of claiming that she was hitting on me? No chance of that, right? Ryan Mogilevich, no chance of that. As we continue here on the drive home at 5, we are in the midst of the Chinese Lunar New Year, and it is the year of the dog. That's right. The Red Chinese, they eat dogs, but it's the year of the dog in the Asian communities, and right on time because oftentimes it is Italians who claim that they invented macaroni, they invented pasta, they invented lasagna. They couldn't be more hopelessly wrong. In fact, it was the explorer Marco Polo who was traveling the old spice route out to the Far East. Oh, that was traveled ever since Roman times. But Marco Polo, when he came back to L'Italia, he brought back with him what looked like dumplings, although the Italians renamed it ravioli. And I'm not talking about Franco-American out of the can that many of you ate when you were going to college as part of your sorority or frat just to survive. And lasagna. And all different kinds of macaronis. And that's why it's ironic the other day at the start of the Asian Lunar New Year, the year of the dog, that some gunman was outside of the exterior of the Marco Polo Ristorante on Court Street in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, a mob joint owned by a Gambino guy who's been laundering money for the Gambino crime family. In fact, he actually pled guilty as such, Joseph Chirico. Now, obviously, things have gone south for him because initially when he was asked, hey, what are all the guns, bullet holes outside? And what Joseph Chirico was saying is, oh, no, it has nothing to do with the local yokels here. You know, you're talking about Kid Blast, Joey Gallo years ago. No. We're talking about modern-day street gangs. This is the continued war between the black street gangs of the Gowanus houses and the Red Hook houses, public housing, NYCHA housing. Well, he lied. It was actually a vendetta. It's a blood feud that is taking place internally within the shrinking Gambino crime family. And Joseph Chirico has decided he's going to take the code of Omerta. And yet judges will line up. They'll want to sit in a front row seat of the Marco Polo restaurant. Cops go in there. Elected officials go in there. Even though everybody knows in the neighborhood in Carroll Gardens, they might have good food. There's no doubt about that. But it's a mob joint. It's run by the Gambino crime family, Joseph Chirico. So how many are going to be going there now? How many are going to be extolling the virtues of Marco Polo, knowing that those gunshots on the outside of the facade were put there by another Italian stallion and not black street gangs that were competing against one another from the Gowanus houses and the Red Hook houses? Huh? How come NYPD is not investigating that link?